Feelings are not facts is a statement that one of our practitioners made during our monthly practitioner training. And I yelled a resounding, yeah, finally get it. This is the core of what we've been saying for the last 10 years. And it turns out that it is backed up by the world's leading neuroscientist who really discovered this later on in his career, but was not accepted by mainstream neurology. And in fact, his old idea about where emotion comes from, about what fear really is and where it's generated, is still being taught in neurology classes today, even though he disagrees with his own hypothesis. But let's talk about why the idea that feelings are not facts matters so much to each and every one of us, and we just didn't know it. In this episode, we're going to talk about why this might be the most powerful, transformative idea that you could ever have. We're also going to talk about what to do about it, how to handle this, how to manage it, so that your life does become more yours, to where you become more independent and autonomous from random feelings and thoughts that may be controlling your life, like chronic fear, like chronic anxiety, like trauma. Yesterday, our business manager and my daughter, Leah Larson, said, can a person be de-traumatized? And we kind of laughed about the word de-traumatized. And the truth is, absolutely, you can be, but you have to understand, what is the trauma in the first place? What really is it in the body? And if you know what it is, then you know how to de-traumatize someone. This is so interesting. It has everything to do with Dr. Joseph Ledoux's work in neurology. Trauma, PTSD, and all of the effects of these situations that happen to a nervous system have to be understood in a new way to know how to unwind them, how to really have power over them and control. The biggest issue is that these things tend to rule a human's life if you've been traumatized, if you have post-traumatic stress disorder, if you have chronic post-traumatic stress disorder. These things can take over a human's life and shape what that life is about, shape the meaning of a life. And with CogniMovement, our one huge mission is to help bodies get control of their own nervous systems, to help bodies be able to delete patterns out of a nervous system like trauma, like PTSD. So that life, that human, is no longer ruled by sometimes what's a single moment in their life. Think about this for yourself. What is the single moment in your life that you feel like maybe ruined your life? And that maybe far in the past is controlling most of your thoughts, most of your actions, and actually maybe even define who you are as a human. Think about that. That a single moment in time could define you, and possibly has. In our book, Suffering is Optional, it's one of the first things that I wrote about, is that we define ourselves by the worst thing that ever happened to us in our life. And for many of us, it was either a moment or a period of time in which this thing happened. But 10, 20, 30 years later, we're still talking about it. And often we're leading conversations with it. We're introducing ourselves as the trauma that we experienced. One of my first experiences with this, and if you've been listening to the show for a while, you'll know this story, but it's so poignant for me. And it really led to why I do this work. It was though a woman that I met through my church. And she was this lovely woman, married, had two great kids, was kind of a leader amongst people in the congregations. Somebody who had a lot of smarts and a lot of savvy. She would organize things and, you know, the parties and different things. An amazing human. And I heard her many times introduce herself or be talking about herself and saying that she was a child of an adult child of alcoholics is how she posed it. What she also was a kind of a Native American princess, even though that's not a thing, not trying to be offensive, but in my mind as a teenager, that's what it was. Her dad had been the leader, the chief, the president, they call it now, of a tribal organization. And now her brother was, you know, they were the first family of this tribal organization. And yet that didn't have merit or value. Not that it had to in her life, but it wasn't something she led with. She didn't lead with wife and mother. She didn't lead with leader in her own right. She led with adult child of an alcoholic. And in the back of my mind, I was so curious as a teenager about why such an amazing human, in my estimation, would lead with that storyline. And I think that fascination led me to want to know more and more about this and led me to this work eventually. But what I know now is there's a part of the body, a part of the brain system that actually governs this part of our personality, governs a part of our actions, the way we think. And it's called the limbic system. And within the limbic system is a reticular activating system that actually allows in information, deletes information, skews our perspective, but is about our survival. It manages our survival responses. Now, survival responses have everything to do with how we perceive information and react, right? So perceiving information is about our thoughts, how we process information. And then the reaction is what our bodies do about it. So that is led by sensation that we refer to as emotion. The gut feeling that tenses up your body, gets your heart rate going, and starts you moving before your conscious mind registers what you're running from. Before the thought happens, oh my God, there's a lion on my butt. Your body literally starts moving to save your life. And today, we don't often have a lion on our butt, but we do have other emergencies. And we also have other big emotional things that feel like a lion. And our body still goes into that same movement. Heart rate goes up, muscles tense, and we get ready to run. Only now, there really isn't anywhere to run. Where do you run? Out of the office? Where do you run to if your body is in fear about a money situation, which for many of us feels like life and death? Where do you run to if someone has just in your family that you love has just had a terrible diagnosis? Unless you're an actual runner, that hormones, the chemicals, the body reaction turns into what we now know as a feeling of anxiety. And for some of us, chronic anxiety. It is this constant threat that this part of the brain, the limbic system, is reacting to and trying to figure out how to survive. This is what the neuroscientist, Dr. Joseph Ledoux, came to towards the end of his career. At first, he said that the limbic system, this part of the body, was simply in charge of fear, just a fear response. And later in his career, he realized that it really was in charge of our emotional response as it related to survival. Now, think about this for a minute. Survival just isn't fear. Survival has to do with food. It has to do with shelter. It also has to do with getting out of the way of a lion. But it has to do with all of our basic needs, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, all of the things that are on there. This part of our body is in charge of deciding, will this kill us or keep us alive? You know, think about food cravings. Think about, you know, overeating. Think about what a person does when they're stressed out around food. That is that part of the brain that is managing that situation. Think about homes in which a person is a hoarder and their house is stuffed with things, right? Almost unlivable. That part of the brain that has to do with shelter, survival, needing things, has gotten dysregulated, has gotten an idea that drives that human to collect and store things, even if those things actually in the long run are to their detriment. Now, here's a good point. This part of your body is not always correct. It's not always correct. And in many ways, it's incorrect because it learns from its experience. It learns from its environment. This is another thing that Dr. Ledoux pointed out, that it isn't instinctual all the time. There are instincts, but it's more a learned situation. What have you experienced? Things we call trauma, that creates an imprint on this part of your body that then creates your actions, like hoarding, like overeating. Even things like sex addiction, addiction in general, is handled by this part of the body, this part of the brain, in an errant idea that it is keeping you safe and alive. You know, procreation is a huge part of our existence, our whole humanity's survival. And so some people's survival mechanism is focused in that area. Here's the most important thing about this. It's rarely conscious. That person could make up things, but almost never explain why they have this compulsion. The limbic system, in their case, has had an experience, we would call that a trauma, that informed that system to put that part of their needs structure on high alert and, you know, constantly need to procreate, constantly need to collect things, constantly need to eat, constantly need to check the doorknobs, OCD. Those kinds of things are handled by this part of the brain. A need for survival that gets stuck on repeat mode. So again, we may start to see more and more that many of the things we do are on autopilot. In fact, some scientific literature says that between 95 and 97% of the things that we do every day are on autopilot. Kind of a part of our autonomic nervous system, meaning autopilot. Things like our breathing, things like our heart, things like some movements, like getting blood to the ends of our fingertips. You know, where does nutrition go? All of that is part of the autonomic system that we don't have to think about. So the brain wants to be very efficient. The whole system wants to be very efficient. So it puts as many things as it can on autopilot to save energy. The problem is some of the things that get on autopilot are not resourceful for us in the long term as a human and in our human life. So what do we do about this? How do we change this and gain control over a part of the body that is autonomous? Well, if you think about it, you can have control over your breathing. You can have control over your heart rate. You can even have some measure of control over things like digestion, which are also autonomic. But you have to know how to hack into the system. And this is the most important piece, that hacking into a system that seems unhackable, seems unknowable. If in neuroscience today, at the highest levels of education, they are still teaching an outdated theory that Dr. Ledoux invented in the first place, and then now has rewritten, now has changed his mind about, then how are the rest of us supposed to know what to do about this? Well, it turns out that we do know, and there is a way to hack into it, and there's a way to change it, and it's far easier than you ever imagined. When we come back from this first break, I'm going to talk a little bit about the idea that feelings are not facts and how this gets us caught up in cycles as well, that maybe ruining not just our financial lives, our physical health lives, but our relationships as well, our relationships with, you know, things like money and food and other people, and how knowing this piece can ultimately be the most powerful thing you ever learned. So let's hear from the good folks at the UK Health Radio Network, and we will be right back.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
The station that makes you feel good.
All right, we are back and we are talking about the autonomic nervous system, which may seem like a boring topic until you understand that the things that are on autopilot may not be the things you want to be on autopilot, but they may be in charge of your predominant emotional life, which then actually controls your mental life, your thoughts. We talked about this a little bit in the first segment, in which if your survival mode is turned on high all the time without any guardrails, any governors, it will be constantly sending emotion, feeling that gets your body moving. And then the thought about why you're doing that comes later. We talked about how there's anxiety that happens, this revving up of the nervous system, this need to run or do something or get out of the way of the thing that is about to attack you. Only there's nowhere to run in times like grief, in times like, you know, a money situation, in times like when someone really just hurt your feelings, a relationship issue. There's not running out of the way of the lion, which is what our system is really built and designed to do. And so instead, the body internalizes that feeling and we get things like chronic anxiety or PTSD or, you know, really a trauma that's running our life all the time. So we started out this discussion that feelings are not facts and that today feelings have become facts. Today, which is, you know, very politically dividing, if I feel like I'm a boy or a girl, everyone around me has to agree with that decision. So like in if we're talking about trans people, you know, if I'm offended by your political view, then my offense, my feeling trumps your right to have that political view. We've gotten to where we do believe that our feelings are facts. If you're in the more metaphysical, more woo-woo field, and you're using intuition, many times a feeling that an intuitive person or empathic person has is translated into a fact and then repeated and told to someone else without the understanding that intuitive or that empath is pulling information through their nervous system as well, through their field, through their limbic system. And that limbic system has a very specific skew. It's called a distortion. Every thought, every feeling that we have is distorted by our life experience, what we think we know, what we've seen, what we've heard, what we've been taught. This is what Dr. Ledoux was talking about, that this system is influenced by a lifetime of experience and turns that lifetime of experience into what it thinks are facts, our data, where realistically, those experiences are very much corrupted files. Even when they happen, even when a trauma happens, oftentimes the body is in such a state of fight or flight that it misunderstands, missees, mishears, miscalculates many of the details. This is why eyewitness testimony is really very, not very reliable. But we, in our everyday life, we think our own eyewitness testimony is ultimately the most reliable. And because of that, we use it to make the rest of the decisions about every other thing in our life. If you understand this one thing, that just because you have a feeling and a strong feeling about something, it doesn't mean it's true. It simply means that these are the parameters of your very specific limbic system and what it has learned. But what if what it has learned is completely off base? Think about this. Another idea that Dr. Ledoux has was that fear is not universal, but danger is. So what does this mean and how does it relate to us? So in many cultures, they revere things like spiders, where in a Western culture, we have so much arachnophobia. Everybody's terrified of spiders. So the fear is not intrinsic of a spider. And the danger is always there if they're poisonous, but not everyone reacts with fear. If a spider were universally to every human on the planet built in that we know it's dangerous, we wouldn't have the people that think they're cute and keep them in cages and love them. We would not have them be revered by some cultures. So this actually is true in every area of life. Cultures fear things, cultures revere things. It's not across the board. In the Western society, we don't really fear lions and tigers because our experience of them is in a cage. We think they're cute. We would love to pet them. But if you're in the African Sahara where you have, or African plains where there are tigers and lions, those people know to fear them, know what to do to avoid them, know what to do to keep themselves safe. They have a totally different experience of that. This is true for every experience in our life in the Western society as well. You have people who absolutely fear finances and money and other people who absolutely thrive in that environment. So if we fundamentally understand that we're each unique in how we respond to every situation, then we start to understand that every human's behavior is simply through a lens of their experience. Not true or untrue, not real or unreal, just simply their lens of experience. This really helps us understand other people. When you think, what in the world are they thinking? What in the world are they doing? You start to understand, oh, what they're doing is reacting through their own experience. They are not necessarily reacting at me. They're reacting through their own built-in pre-recorded programming of the limbic system. Now, that recording happened sometime in their life. And whatever age it happened in, whatever age that traumatic experience happened in, is it the age that their body reacts to it every time? If it happened at 7, then at 55, their body is still reacting from a 7-year-old experience. So you think, why is that person acting so childish? You know, why do they seem like a 7-year-old and they're 55 about this experience? Why are they throwing a fit over not getting the food that they wanted or the reservation or whatever? It's because their body's reacting at that age. And so is yours. How many times have you had an experience in which people said to you, why are you acting like this? What? This is not a big deal. But to you, it's the biggest deal. Because that situation, the reason that your body is reacting in the way that it is, probably what got recorded sometime when you were too young to be rational about your feelings. Now, for some people, this seems horrifically offensive. My feelings matter. What I think matters. But it only matters if you're in control of it. And most of us are absolutely not, because we do not know that this has been recorded somewhere back in time and that we're on repeat. And this is really an automatic reaction, feeling, thought, and then subsequent action. If you want to know why you do what you do, if you want to know why you feel the way you do, you look at this part of our system that handles all of our automations. And then you decide, okay, am I willing to continue down this path of having everything I do pretty much on automation? Or do I want full control over myself, my thoughts, my feelings? And if you do, if you're one of those people like me who wants to be in control of what I'm doing, thinking, feeling, and acting, then you take this sentence, feelings are not facts, to heart. And when you're out of control, or when you see somebody else out of control, or when you find yourself making an action that somehow keeps ruining your life, you stop and think, wait, where is this coming from? And am I actually in control of this thought, feeling, action pattern? If not, in that moment, it takes it out of an automation and into your conscious mind. This is the most important thing. When it comes into your conscious mind, you have a choice. Now, having it come into your conscious mind is only as useful as the tool you can use to deal with it. So you need to be able to remap, repattern that program. When you catch it in progress, that is the perfect time. So how do you remap it? And why would you do that? So I'll tell myself a little bit here. This week I had to, I'm dealing with my parents' estate. It's been 5 years since they passed, 35 days apart after a long illness. Both of them had brain illnesses for about 7 or 8 years before they passed. So it was a lot. And so it's coming to an end and we're having to deal with their estate and their things, and very difficult. We're also dealing with a lawyer in this situation, as you do in estate, finishing estates and dealing with estates. And I was really upset about something the lawyer was trying to do. And I had read an email. By the way, it's not a great lawyer, but I'd read this email and I was so upset that I found myself almost out of my own control. Now, this doesn't happen often because we have all of these tools, but I was so emotional about this situation, so many moving parts, that I found myself thinking, I'm a little out of my mind here. I don't know what to do. I was angry. I was upset. I was, sad, all of that. So I stopped And I took my Cogno movement ball. This is the ball that we use, a tool that we use to get the eyes moving, to get the brain distracted. And I did what's called a mini Cogno movement session. And in that session, we move the eyes and we move the body in a way that pulls the attention to the physical body, the feeling that I'm having that I realized was not a fact, right? So it moves the eyes into that feeling state. It connects with the kinesthetic body that is controlling this out of control feeling. And then the session moves into the logical mind, eyes and ears. What have I heard? What have I known? What do I know? More into neutrality. What have I seen? Allowing my mind and body to, and my brain to move into that state. And in this part of my vision and body and movement, the Cogno movement session, all of a sudden I saw what was actually in that email. I had completely misread what the email was about. And the line, specific line that was upsetting me so much was not even about what I thought it was. So I had gotten myself, you know, nearly hysterical over something that was not accurate. It didn't exist, right? The next part of the session moves into the part of the brain, the upward part of the vision and brain that actually has the ability to detach from the physical, that feeling, and move into more of what we might call our conscious mind, but also into the part of the brain that can think, that can future pace, that can come up with new ideas. And I realized in that moment, the chaos that I was feeling also wasn't mine. It was somebody else in a part of the process that I had gotten roped into their chaos. You know, that intuitive, that empathic part where you are kind of feeling everybody else's things. I had gotten roped into their chaos. So that part of it also was not a fact. The chaos that I was experiencing and feeling and thinking, not a fact at all, not even mine. Of course, I felt out of control because I wasn't in control of that person's patterns. Affected by it, but not in control of it. So this took me just a few minutes, 5-7 minutes of using the Cogno ball and the patented Cogno movement, movements and flow to recognize my true self. Now, what makes Cogno movement very, very different than everything else is we're not meditating. There is some breath work that you add, but you are literally moving through parts of your brain very, very systematically, addressing and hacking into how your nervous system functions. This is the thing about many repetitive things that are used to quote unquote regulate the nervous system. It can calm your heart rate and it can calm your breath. It can even calm your vagal response in that moment, but it doesn't remap it. Cogno movement very specifically will show the nervous system itself. It shows that limbic system. Here's what you are reacting to. Here's what's happening in real time. And here is what the future of that action, feeling, thought pattern is. So let's hear from the good folks at the UK Health Radio Network, and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So we're back and we are talking about so many things, but the core thing is that feelings are not facts. And that oftentimes emotion, sensation, feeling in the body comes before thought. And that this whole pattern, when the body's in survival mode, prevents you from actually experiencing the truth of what's happening in your life. It prevents you from seeing the good stuff. It prevents you from really feeling grateful in a gratitude journal. It prevents you from thriving in a relationship. It prevents your body from thriving and healing. It prevents you from having amazing ideas and amazing growth in your life, which are all possible when you can shut down the fight or flight system, not to your detriment, but to a place where you have now the opening of the reticular activating system and the ability to really take in your whole environment in a safe, controlled way. Super, super important. So how do we do this thing? We do it by first understanding, which we've talked about for the last half hour, how the system works. And understanding that this system works for you, not against you, even though it feels that way. And understanding that it is not about the trauma that you've had in your life. It's about how the system recorded that trauma and is reacting to it in the now. So if you know all that, and then you know there's a way into that system, that the nervous system has a very specific pattern to which it handles these things. And it starts with feeling. It starts with emotion. The stronger the body needs you to react, the bigger it believes the threat is, the stronger the feeling. You're not necessarily having an intuitive hit. You are having a body remembering, oh, that trauma, we believe that nearly killed you. So it's happening again now. And let's react with full force, big feeling in the body, so that you will take the action it needs you to take next, which is fight, freeze, or fawn. And you might recognize yourself in any one of those. And then the thoughts around it are formulated. Okay, this means that right now, that guy standing across the room that I think is looking at me, he's a massive threat. I might need to fight him. I may need to run away from him. I might need to hide from him, or I might need to fawn and act like I'm interested in him, right? Can you see yourself in that scenario, anybody? So the emotion is going to drive the thought process. Unfortunately, we all believe that our thoughts come first and our emotions come second, but it's not true. So the first thing we need to do is recognize the sensation. Oh, my body just had a feeling. The minute you're aware, my body just had a feeling. I don't know if that feeling is true or not. Feelings are not facts. You start to unwind the pattern. With cognitive movement, we move the eyes down because in the down position, the eyes are connected directly with the kinesthetic feeling part of the brain, AKA the limbic system, right? We connect with the body directly. And now because you're doing this with your logical mind, you're logically connected. Okay, body, I see you. I'm going to acknowledge the reaction that you're having. In that acknowledgement, eyes down position, connected to that part of the brain, the body relaxes because it's like, okay, we have your full attention. We have your full attention. You're paying attention to the signal we just sent. Okay. Cognitive movement then has those eyes moving left and right in that down position, kinesthetic feeling part of the body. Left hemisphere, right hemisphere. Remember I said earlier that what we're talking about is getting out of that limbic system and into the rest of the brain so that the rest of our neurons can consider what's actually happening. Right hemisphere of the brain, the body's like, huh, I don't think I see the danger that's here. Left hemisphere, let me consider that a little more linear way. Right hemisphere, again, yeah, you know, this doesn't really look like a problem. Left hemisphere, let me calculate that out. I think you're right. Very, very quickly, this left and right movement in that kinesthetic down position starts to unwind that pattern. It starts to show the limbic system what's now, what's real in this moment, and gets it out of the past, out of pulling from another moment in time that doesn't have anything to do with this one, out of its memory pattern. The next thing that cognitive movement does is it starts to move that information up the body. The eye position starts to move up, which is what the nervous system does. Feeling, brain, logical mind, up into ideas and inspiration. So it will move through the logical mind. We start to actually move left and right up the body using the cognitive ball, which has its own properties, its own way that it interacts with the brain. It's an interaction, like a computer interaction with the brain. So we start to move up into the eye position is leveled with the eyes and ears. Logical mind, left brain, right brain. In the logical mind, you're going to see what is actually happening. Logic comes on. This is what happened to me when I realized that what I had read in the email in the state of fight or flight was incorrect. My mind showed me the recording of that email, and I'm like, realized, oh my God, that's not what it said. That's not even what it meant. Because I was now moving in my logical mind, left brain, right brain. The right brain is like, well, okay, let's really consider. Let's calm down and look for a minute. The left brain calculates that information. And between the two hemispheres of the brain, the recording and the memory becomes clear. It also starts to clear up the recording and the memory of the original reason that my body is reacting so severely to this situation. Now, it's always somewhere in the past, right? So then we start to move up above the eyebrows, up above the head, left hemisphere, right hemisphere. And that part of the system moves into future ideas and inspiration. Eyes up position is I win, I'm in praise and worship, or I'm thinking, I'm processing. So in this part of the brain, everything starts to get processed through how I felt, what I saw in my logical mind, and then what's really going on gets connected in that eyes up position. So very, very, very quickly, the rest of the brain has moved through that limbic system's natural pattern of process all the way up into when the problem would be over, the wave of the problem, you know, initial interaction, crisis mode, and then resolution. So with this pattern, this cognitive movement pattern, we are moving from crisis mode to resolution in lightning speed. It doesn't take hours or days, it takes minutes because we're following the system's natural pattern. But we're doing it in a way that shows the pattern to itself. Is this really fight or flight worthy or not? Some things are. Some things are for a minute or two only. After that, we need our logical brain and consciousness mind to come online to create really good solutions, right? When you're in the fight or flight mode, it is only intended to get you out of the way of the lion minutes until the point in which you're like, okay, I'm in the tree. I'm above the lion. I can see that wasn't even a lion at all. That was my neighbor's dog, right? Oh, I like that dog. Oh, I can climb down out of the tree where everything's fine, right? What we don't get to in this day and age with our anxiety, with our trauma, with the way we respond to trauma is resolution, remapping of the problem, remapping of the nervous system, remapping of the limbic system that is creating the sensation in the first place. So our conversation today might have been a little heady in that we're talking about science, we're talking about nervous systems, but we're really just talking about the way we humans react. We're in a day and age that we're neurohacking, we're biohacking. You know, I just heard that they can connect a brain cell to a machine and have the brain cell move the machine, make the machine work. But this is the part that is hidden from us, and it no longer needs to be hidden, how we can manage, control, and thrive in our own bodies, in our own neural patterns, in our own thought feeling patterns, and bypass, hack this terrible anxiety and fight or flight that our society seems to be plagued with right now. In our opinion, the answer is the cognitive movement system, because it's designed to do that. It's the only thing that I know on the planet that does that thing in the way that it does. It doesn't just regulate your system. What it does is rewire the system, and you rewire it. There's no external programming. It's simply your system seeing you and making a better decision. All right. If you'd like to know more about this, it's cognomovement.com. If you know you want to get started today rewiring your system, it's cognomovement.com/essentials. And it's a way that you can do this on your own immediately in as little as 5 minutes. But it shows you how to use it in lots of other areas in your life. And there's some really amazing bonuses and brain science in there that you're not going to want to miss. All right, everybody. This is Liz Larson. I am signing off for today. Until next time, be safe and be well.